This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Thanks for listening to the Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. Hope you guys have had an amazing weekend so far. Let's jump right into the show today because I've got a big one for you. Amy Markscores is my interview this week, and I'm so excited to talk to Amy. I did her weekend show many, many times when she was doing it on KMOX. Now she's obviously has the midday show, but it was my honor to welcome her on the program. So let's jump into the interview with Amy now. This is so exciting. Amy's here on the Rachel Zimmerman Show. Amy Markscores, thanks for joining me, Amy.
It's my honor. I honestly wanted to be on the show sooner. I have my feelings hurt.
I know. I was like, I've been wanting to ask you on, but it's just, it's, I record in the mornings when you guys are on the air, so it's a whole thing. And then I had Ron John. I'm like, oh, I have to have Amy on now. It's going to look like I'm playing favorites, and he's definitely not my favorite. So I had to.
Well, at least we clear the air, because it was a little hurtful when I saw Chris Ronji, and I thought, well, whatever. I thought we were friends.
We are friends. You are always so great when you have me on your weekend show all the time when you had it on KMOX. And that was my first time being on KMOX, was you invited me to come in and co-host when Charlie was out one time. So that was like such a cool experience. And I thank you for that. I'm really excited to just get to interview you and get to know you a little bit more. So let's begin at the beginning. Tell me about your childhood. It seems like you were raised by amazing parents who raised you very intentionally. Just tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, I was. I was homeschooled. I like to say I was a first grade dropout. I was homeschooled from second grade all the way through. I have three siblings, so there were four of us. And my mom stayed home and homeschooled us. And my mom and dad, my family, I almost feel like sometimes I tell them like we had it too good. Mm-hmm. We were so happy and we had so much fun that it really set a high bar for the rest of my life. But everyone homeschools differently. So I do want to say that. And so some people are not by the book at all, very freewheeling. Other people will use like an online school. We were definitely by the book. We didn't do online. We didn't do co-ops, but we had different books and we read and read and read. And I will give you an example that just sounds ridiculous. So sometimes on a winter morning, we would wake up, for school and go downstairs, and my mom would have a fire going and cinnamon rolls, and she would make us like lattes. I'm like totally spoiled. But I was also very driven. So even in second grade, it wasn't like my mom stood at a chalkboard and taught us. It was really teaching yourself how to learn, a lot of self-delegation. So even in second grade, I would make my own schedules, and I'm going to sound insane. I would lay out my clothes the night before. Like, I even put the watch on the wrist of my sleeve, And I would wake up, and at 6 a.m., the Power Rangers were on, and James Bond Jr. I think James Bond Jr. was first, and then the Power Rangers. And I would wake up and start school, sometimes before 6 a.m. Then I would watch my two shows. Get a little break. And then continue school at 7 a.m. And our family rule was you just had to start school by 8. But so I would always get up a few hours early.
And, so you were like showing up your siblings then.
Yeah, I was just very driven in that way. I was an early morning person. But my older sister, she is the artist, the musician. And so she falls into that stereotype of the late night owl. I think she really came to life at night, and I was dead by 8:30.
Yeah, so you are such an accomplished person. I was wondering, are your siblings as much of a go-getter as you are?
Oh, yeah. I think what's amazing in having being one of four, how different each kid is and their interests. My sister started her own business, her own jewelry business, when she was 18, right out of high school, and soon had it in an art gallery in Chicago and was just very, very gifted. My brother is a musician who, this is partly homeschooling. Like, my mom would bring up computer parts and different electronics in a box and say, here, have fun, start building things. And so he was very driven in that mind, that technical mind. And again, like taught himself guitar and piano and drums and ukulele and bass guitar and just had fun. And I think that was really a credit to my mom and dad that learning is fun. Like, they're not filling the bucket for us. They're like saying, okay, here's a bucket. Let's go have fun and find what your passions are. And that's how I got into writing, because I thought I didn't like writing. And I discovered hockey when I was 12 years old. And my mom said, all right, you guys are, you're talking a lot of hockey at the dinner table. Why don't you start writing it down? So when I was 12, she would bring me to the Blues practices at the Hardee's Iceplex, which has been knocked down, in Chesterfield. No one was there at the time other than the sports writers, and I would flag down the players, Al MacInnis, Pavel Demitra, Joel Quenneville, Mark Bergevin, Tony Twist, Kelly Chase, flag them down and interview them, and then I would write an essay. I'd go home and write an essay, and that was my writing, was interviewing these players, and that was 12, 13, 14, 15. I continued to do that.
That's an amazing story. did you ever make like a little newspaper for your parents or anything like that?
You know, I didn't make a newspaper for my parents because I think I was too busy writing what I very creatively called the hockey newsletter. It was 30 pages, single spaced, Microsoft Word document with the occasional black and white picture printed out from the internet. And yeah, so that was kind of funny. And I would bring it to the Blues practices and, you know, see Al MacInnis and Mr. MacInnis, here's the newsletter I wrote. So pretty funny and pretty amazing that they humored me.
They must have loved you. They probably thought that was so adorable and like, oh, this girl's going to be somebody someday for sure.
Either that or this lady's insane. But
I'm glad you brought up being a writer, because we know you on the Dave Glover Show as a radio host. And we talk about you being a marathon runner all the time. But I've read your book, The Lola Papers, and I wanted to talk about you as a writer. So who are some of your biggest influences?
Yeah, it's funny. So I know myself as a writer, and the radio side of things is new to me. I started with the Blues in 2016, didn't start this really political talk, headline news talk until 2019. So there was, 18 years that I was a writer, a tutor. And when I graduated high school, I was going to go to college. And then at the last minute, and I mean, I think the day I was buying my books, I realized I don't think this is for me, which I know makes no sense. And it's a much longer story, but I was like, I want to just keep teaching myself how to write. So I read and read and read. My biggest influences, and I don't write like them, I would never pretend to be that good, but like Charles Dickens, the Victorian era writer, is my favorite. I read a lot of Stephen Crane. I read Robert Frost. I read Joseph Conrad, Emily Dickinson, and then more Charles Dickens. He was my favorite. Jane Austen, the Bronte sisters. So I read a lot of Victorian era literature. And then with Robert Frost and some of the poets, you can do is, I called them my teachers, but Robert Frost taught at Amherst College. And there are books that are Robert Frost's letters to students, to his students, to aspiring writers. So I would get those books that were letters from these great writers and read the letters and learn from them. And I would take, what do I love about Charles Dickens? What do I love about Emily Dickinson or Stephen Crane? And try to create my own voice. And that is one thing that served me well, because I don't think I'm impressive on paper. At least I wasn't then. I mean, I had a high school education, and so I didn't look impressive on paper. But what I did have was my voice. So when I got my first book published when I was, I think, 26, one of the determining factors was my agent. I got an agent who then I got a publisher. They said, your voice is so unique. And I think it's because I didn't have anyone guiding me to find my voice. It was just on my own and through lots of reading.
So tell me about your books.
So The Lola Papers is semi-autobiographical. It is 1 year of running with, I was never a runner growing up. I played ice hockey. I played tennis. I thought I was tough because I played ice hockey, but nothing challenged me more physically, emotionally, and mentally than running did. And so The Lola Papers is my transition from being a hockey player to a marathon runner. but it really uses the sport of running as a lens to view life, relationships, friendships, and insecurities that I had. Running exposes them. You're very exposed as a runner. You can't pretend to be better or tougher than you are at mile 20. You know, it's 4 a.m., 5 a.m., you're running, you're around people, you're trying your best emotionally and physically. You break down, you break down. So it's a very real, very vulnerable sport. So that was the Lola Papers, is really my growth as a person viewed through the lens of running. My second book is Powered by Hope. That came out in 2014. And that is the story of Terry Grieg, who is an Ironman triathlete. She did the World Championships in Kona, Hawaii. But her bigger story is that she overcame alcoholism, drug addiction, and to pull her life together, find faith, and then to have the strength to battle cancer while she trained. Just a really remarkable story.
Do you have another, I don't want to ask if you have another book in the works, but do you ever like fantasize about like, okay, if I were to write another one, here's the direction I would go in?
I have a few ideas, probably two or three, all of them so amorphous, not even amoebas, maybe an amoeba at best, that I'm thinking about. I would like to write again. I haven't written in a very long time. It's been almost 10 years. I wrote a couple of pieces for the St. Louis Blues, but I feel out of practice and definitely a little intimidated because I haven't written a book since 2014, but I do know there's something in there. So I got to figure that out.
Yeah, don't feel intimidated. I read your piece about Pat Maroon, and I don't know anything about the Blues. I don't know anything about hockey. That piece made me cry.
Oh my gosh,
it was so good. Like, you're so talented in many ways, but I just remember crying and being like, why am I crying?
Thank you.
Okay, let's talk about getting started in radio. I think I know this. You started with the Blues, but how exactly did that happen?
Yeah, it's actually really cool, and it's all Tom Ackerman.
Okay.
So I was on the Charlie Brennan show as a guest because of my two books. So okay. I was on with the Lola Papers and Powered by Hope. And each time, I think the last time I spoke on the Charlie Brennan show, Tom Ackerman also interviewed me because the Susan G. Komen race was coming up. It's a huge one in St. Louis. So he was asking me about the Lola Papers, which was my first book. And I started talking to him about hockey and my life and my background. And he said, you're going to be on radio one day. And I said, no. There's a reason I'm a writer. I need 7, 8, 9 drafts because I'm not good in the moment. I need a long time to think about what I'm going to say. He said, no, you're going to be on radio. And I said, absolutely not. That was 2014. In 2016, and this was when the St. Louis Blues were still on KMOX, the Blues reached out to Tom in the sports department and said, we're looking to expand our broadcast team. We also have a brand new show. It's a 2-hour hockey show, This Week in Hockey, and we would like to add a new host to that. And Tom Ackerman said, well, I know this woman who grew up playing ice hockey, because I did grow up playing ice hockey and, you know, interviewing the Blues and all of that. She knows the game. She doesn't have any experience in radio, but she can communicate. She's a writer. You should interview her. So I interviewed with Chris Kerber, and I got the job with, no experience in radio. But it was rough. I mean, it was very rough the first few shows, but I did know the game. And that's kind of what you have to lean back on is, okay, I can talk hockey. So that was a weekly show. I started jumping into the pregame and postgame every now and then. I'd do an intermission report every now and then. But I was in the locker room every day. I went to every single game. And by 2019, I got to host pre, post, and intermission solo, which I later found out was the first woman to host solo the radio broadcast of any professional sports team in St. Louis.
Wow.
Which was
very
a
cool.
Great honor. Yeah.
I love that story. I had no idea that it was Tom.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And then it's also like kind of goals. You started as a guest on the Charlie Brennan show and then became a co-host. Speaking of Charlie, tell me a little bit about what it was like working with him.
Well, it was working with a legend, and I was very aware of it because there are certain moments where I fangirled because I grew up listening to KMOX. I'm from St. Louis, and I driving to hockey practice in the morning, my dad in the car were listening to KMOX. So one of the first time I fangirled was sports on a Sunday morning, seeing Tom Ackerman with his coffee in the newspaper, you know, the sports section. I'm like, oh my gosh. So then working with Charlie, was just such an honor. I was very aware of his status, his stature, I should say, in the radio world. I learned so much from him. He was so gracious to work with me. He cracks me up because he's so dry. Like, his humor is so dry. And I would literally laugh all the time. And people would even say, like, why are you laughing so much? It can't be that funny. I'm like, no, he's that funny. And he's so obnoxious, and you wouldn't think that. And he's cool with me saying that because he's, you know, it just seems like, you know, the guy that's, he calls himself the provocateur, right, on Donnybrook and all of that. But I learned a ton from Charlie. He knows the city politics in and out. And that was a lot of fun. And people had also... they would remind me, like, you know, you're working with a legend, right? And yes, I mean, I was put in my place a lot.
So you have your own show now. Tell me what you really think about Chris Ronji. That's kind of the point of this entire interview.
Yeah, no, I figured like that guy.
Let's air him out.
Yeah, well, he's the worst. He's the worst. And no, it's funny because we knew each other before the show. I don't even know how we met. I guess kind of the radio world. I was very new to radio. I was, you know, back in 2016. He was in Chicago and would call some of the White Sox games, did pre and post. I think you probably talked to him about that, moved back here to take care of his mom. Somehow we met, and we would meet up occasionally, like once a year, maybe twice a year, and it would always turn to politics. And it's funny because I feel like we just took our friendship and then plopped it over behind microphones. Mm-hmm. And so he is a lot of fun to work with. What I appreciate is that in this very tense political environment where Ronj and I on certain issues and probably several very key issues disagree enormously, that we can have very serious conversations. And I would say even off air, more intense, like work out. You could call it an argument. I would call it a strenuous and enthusiastic debate. You know, we can argue, but then not take it personally and respect where the other person is coming from. Go on the air, do the same thing, you know, talk it out, argue about it, and then just continue being friends and respecting the other person, respecting why they take the position that they do take. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that respect, that being able to snap back, and then the genuine friendship is so important.
Yeah.
And you can't fake it. And it's just the kind of thing that it definitely comes through on the air.
Yeah.
All right. So faith is obviously the defining characteristic of your life. How does that intersect with what you do, with running, with writing, with broadcasting?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Really everything, I would say, especially talking politics, I want to phrase it right, where it is a dream job, but it wasn't my dream job in the sense of I can't wait to go on 50,000 red hot watts and spew political opinions. Like, that's a scary thing to do. Some people love it. Some people might not like your opinion. And so I almost feel surprised by where I'm at. And I feel like the Lord has taken me on this great adventure, whether it was writing books or broadcasting with the Blues when they won the Stanley Cup, or, you know, now talking politics. And I think the biggest thing is each day, if I can help people feel heard or seen or feel that they're not alone, that would be my ultimate goal. Because I do think, you know, I can only be myself. And I know sometimes, you know, whatever I'm saying, there's somebody out there who maybe needs to hear that. And so, and like I said, not everybody, because there are people who disagree with me. But that's why, you know, you have Ronji, because people will respect his opinion and his voice. So I just want to speak truth and be gracious, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. At the same time, with running, yes, the perseverance, you know, all the Bible verses about running the race that's ahead of you. We could, you know, get into that. But I think there's something to be said for perseverance, for delayed gratification, for discomfort, and knowing that you're working towards something bigger. It's kind of what marathoning is. It's kind of countercultural in that sense. And so, yeah, running, it keeps me sane, but it also reminds me how beautiful the world is. When you go to a race, people are encouraging one another, and there are friendships within that as well. So I feel like it's something of a palate cleanser from politics. But faith is always a big part of my life. You only get so much into it on the radio, right? You're not going to talk theology. But I do hope that regardless of whether people listening have faith, don't have faith, however they feel, that as long as I can, try to speak with as much grace as possible.
Athletics are also obviously extremely important to you. Can you imagine for a second what your life would be like without sports?
I know. I love setting goals. I love competing. I love feeling that drive. I can't because it has been such a big part of my life, like growing up playing tennis. My grandpa taught me how to play tennis when I was, you know, five, maybe younger. And we learned on wooden rackets, which shows you like how long it's been. And my grandpa's old wooden rackets from like 1947. But yeah, tennis, running, hockey, soccer, I loved it. And running and hockey have changed the trajectory of my life more than anything, because with hockey, right, interviewing the Blues, falling in love with the sport, playing hockey. And then running, I ended up working at a running store. I was actually like, should I work at Total Hockey, this hockey store in the Valley, or Fleet Feet, a running store in the Valley? I don't know why I picked Fleet Feet, because I really wasn't that experienced of a runner. I had run a marathon, but I wasn't in track in high school or anything like that. But through that store, both of my books came out of relationships and interactions with people through Fleet Feet. And then my first book was published and I was able to go to different running stores across the country. And so, yeah, my whole life, sports have been an integral part of shaping the direction and the trajectory.
And we're back, and it's time for the third part of my interview with Amy Markscores. Yeah, I always see you post like on Instagram and stuff. Oh, I went for a 10-mile run this morning. I'm like, how does that work? So can you, you know, leave out whatever you want to leave out, but can you take me through like a typical weekday for you? What's your schedule like?
Yeah. So generally, depending on how long I have to run, wake up at 5 or 5:30 and then start running in Forest Park. That's the gist of it. Sometimes I'll run through Clayton. We do the arch run. But like this morning, I actually went to Caldy's and then ran from Caldy's, met up with my crew up at Clayton Road, like by Forest Park. And then we ran into Forest Park and it was a workout today. So run a few miles. Then we did hill repeats on Skinker, just up and down and up and down until I almost died. And then a couple miles, a few miles cool down. And run back, grab my coffee, and head home and shower, you know, done by 7:15. And you've got 11, 12 miles on the day. And it feels really, really great until about like 8:30 in the morning. And then I'm tired. I really hit my peak between 7 and 8 in the morning.
That's when the Caldy's comes in handy.
That's when the Caldy's comes in handy. But I feel like I've lived a lifetime. Like Ranj always jokes, you've lived a lifetime by 10 a.m. I'm ready to eat lunch. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's what it is. And then when I'm training really heavily, go to work, come home, and try to sneak in another 5 or 6 miles. And then eat dinner, prep for the show. You know, you kind of have to train like a clock.
I'm so interested in your mindset when it comes to running, because I've ran before, but the whole time I'm just focused on how much pain I'm in and how much I want to stop. Do you ever start a run and go like, I'm not feeling it today, but you just find that gear and push through?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And it's funny because I always say I never feel like running. Like I'm never so happy when my alarm goes off.
Okay.
Like sometimes I could cry. Sometimes I feel like crying when the alarm goes off. Like today it went off at 5 and I literally felt like I could tear up. Like, please no. But I do love it. And so, yeah, you have to push through. Running with others is a huge game changer. Just the accountability of having people there. But also, I do love running. It's a love-hate thing versus someone who can swim. People who swim laps. I know Charlie swims laps. I can't swim one lap. Like that's how I get when people say they hate running. I get it because that's how I feel about swimming. Mm. It feels impossible. I can't breathe. I'm bored out of my mind. I wish I could swim laps, but I couldn't do it. So I imagine that's how non-runners feel. If it's an easy run, you know, with friends, we talk. If it's an easy run by myself, I catch up on political podcasts. But a lot of workouts and races, I can't listen to anything because you're so focused on breathing elbows and you're just trying to survive and get through it. It's like pain management. It's hard to describe, but I do not want pump up music. Nothing. I mean, today was hard and I just need quiet so that I can focus on breathing and not dying, probably.
Amy, you brought up earlier, you know, you talk politics. Some people don't like your opinion. Plenty of people do, but some people don't. Well, how do you handle adversity or criticism when it comes to being on the air or any other aspect of life?
Right. I can handle criticism as far as like my writing goes, in the sense of editors save you from yourself. So if I'm working on a story, I wrote a book and literally had one of my editors say, "I don't get it.
Oh.
Fix it." You know, okay. And so it's okay to see the red lines through your writing. I want that type of objective criticism. When it's nasty, angry criticism because of political opinions, I had to kind of learn how to deal with that. I probably was not great with it, especially in like 2020, 2021. I actually, there were moments because people would write letters or call in or be on social media. And I was so nervous because I'm not a hot take person. And this is a surprise career. Like, I'm not trying to be a politician. I'm not trying to be a Ben Shapiro or Rachel Maddow or anything. I'm just here and I'm grateful to be here. So when the attacks would come, I would say I had to learn how to handle it because I started getting like physically ill, to the point where I almost thought about not doing it, just like walking away, because I was physically ill a lot from it. But the biggest thing is that's like the faith where it comes in, staying in scripture, praying. A huge help now is Mason Jar, my fiance, and he helps keep me grounded. If I come home and if I need to cry or if I'm feeling frustrated, he grounds me, right? He talks me through it. He listens, prays with me, reads scripture. And that is what you have to do to combat the toxicity of political conversation.
Yeah, toxicity is the right word. And, you know, we are very blessed to have these careers, but I think what people don't realize is the amount of criticism you can receive. It is very unnatural. Like, most people are not getting strangers telling, famous people have, but like, if you're a local media personality, the amount of vitriol you can receive is, I've been physically sick over it before too. I've kind of learned to deal with it, but it's always comforting to hear that other people have gone through that and are working through it, because it's not a normal thing to go through, and it does take a lot to kind of push through and get to the other side and go like, okay, I don't have to let this ruin my day every single time. But if it initially ruins your day, I think that's fine.
Yeah. No.
I think that's normal.
Right. And like I said, there are probably those who thrive on it. Like, let's go.
Right.
And that's not me at all. Like, I actually hate confrontation.
I'm the same way.
I hate it. I'm just like George McFly in Back to the Future. I just don't like confrontation. Like, I hate it. And so I want to understand where everybody is coming from. I will say, just my life leading up to this, before I was ever in radio, having strong disagreements with, you know, in a relationship or people that you love or care about, talking to them. If it's one thing if you're trying to own the other side and drive them into the ground, but if you love the person you're talking to, if you love the person you're disagreeing with, you will fundamentally approach it a different way. You'll try to see where they're coming from. And that's how I feel. Like, I feel like I'm always trying to understand, okay, why does this person feel this way? What are their arguments for their position? And making sure I'm trying to take that in. So again, I'm not a hot take person. I don't try to... I'm not trying to quote unquote own anybody. So that's why, too, when some of the hate comes in, I'm like, I was just trying to be nice. Like, I don't know what you want from me.
You don't get it. I'm coming from a good place. Why doesn't that matter to you?
Right, right.
I love that answer, Amy. And it's a big reason why I like you so much and respect you so much. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Before I let you go, what advice do you have for people just getting started out in any of the things that you're so great at, writing, radio, running, like what's just like some blanket great advice you can give?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Okay, so specific advice would all be different for those areas, but I think the biggest blanket thing is, just because you're not great at it at first, don't give up. Keep working. Keep trying. I always say I am not a talented runner. I've made it to a position where I'm surprised. I've even surprised myself, right? Where I'm in that elite field, not professional, but in elite and sub-elite field. And why do I bring that up? Because I have friends who make it into the elite field in the first race that they run. It took me 24 marathons and 60,000 miles. I mean, just insane, right? Like, most people wouldn't want to try that hard. They say, well, you could make it to this field, but it's going to take you 24 marathons and 60,000 miles. Most people are out. So the thing, what I would say is, even if you're struggling, that doesn't mean you're not meant for it. Keep working hard, put in the work, because you can't wait for opportunity. You have to put in the work and be ready so that when the opportunity comes, you've been preparing your whole life.
I love that. Amy, thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. You too, Rachel.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome back to the Rachel Zimmerman Show. I'm about to talk to Amanda Doyle. She is a St. Louis author who has written many books about the St. Louis area and Missouri. And she's here to talk to us about the second Missouri Book Festival happening September 13th and 14th in Washington, Missouri. Amanda, thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So tell us about Missouri Book Fest. What can people expect from this festival? It sounds really cool.
So this is the second Missouri Book Festival. So we can officially now call it the second regular appearance of the Missouri Book Festival in Washington, Missouri. And it is a day-long celebration of stories and the power of stories and the places that books of all kinds can take you. So it's a very interactive experience. It's not, maybe if people hear book festival or literary festival, they might think of authors reading and giving talks and talking about how to write and things like that. There is a little bit of that, but mostly what we have is experiences that are inspired by books. So performances and interactive art activities and poetry slams, all kinds of things to let people experience the joy of, just like what you can learn when you read and when you share those joys with other people.
Very cool. So yeah, even though it's a book festival, there's plenty more to do at the fest. I know you're going to have food and all sorts of different things. Talk to me a little bit about what you were just saying about the joy of reading. You know, people, whenever kids learn to read and they read maybe like their first chapter book, there's kind of nothing like that. Are you guys kind of trying to capture that in the Missouri Book Fest?
Absolutely. Because reading is such a small D democratic kind of thing, right? Like anyone can learn to read and anyone can find a book that speaks to them in some kind of way. So we are hoping that we're grabbing that attention from an early age and just showing kids, definitely, but just reminding even adults, we get real busy sometimes, and it's hard to necessarily make time in your life for something that may seem selfish or frivolous, you know, just reading a book just because you want to read it. But there are so many ways you can take in books now as well, that it's just a good reminder for everyone that when you are reading, you're growing your mind, whether you mean to or not. So I think it's a good exercise for all of us.
Amanda, what does it mean to you as an author to be involved with an event like this that celebrates reading and celebrates writing and all of this great stuff?
It's really priceless. I think a lot of people don't realize, in the age of everything being online and books, it's a double-edged sword, books being available in lots of different ways. But I don't know that especially younger people and even many adults I encounter remember that real people write books. And so when I'm standing with my book, you know, in front of an audience in a school talking about my newest book, is called Missouri Weird and Wonderful, talking about lore about the state of Missouri or off the beaten path kind of facts. And when people come up then and say, like, wait, you wrote this? Like, they're holding a book in their hand and in front of them is standing a person who wrote it. It's just amazing. That kind of interaction is something that, you know, you can't get from Amazon. And it's really, as an author, it means the world.
This seems like such a cool event. I wish I could go. I'm going to be out of town for this, but I just think it's so great in the age where we're kind of battling, you know, people want to take books away. People want to get rid of certain books. You guys are celebrating literature. I think this is so amazing. How can people learn more or get involved with Missouri Book Festival?
For sure. Well, there's a website that'll tell you everything you want to know. It's MissouriBookFestival.com. And to your point about celebrating books, we have some amazing partners for this event, including schools and community organizations in Washington. And a publisher and many libraries are really the force behind making this happen. And those people are out there fighting the battle every day to keep books of all kinds available to people who want to read them.
Amanda, since I have you here and you are an author, tell me about your most recent book.
Sure. So my most recent book is called Missouri, Weird and Wonderful. It was a collaboration with an incredible St. Louis-based illustrator named Dan Zetwalk. And it is like an eye-popping graphic novel style of book all about history, food, natural spaces, interesting animals, everything all about the state of Missouri. So the idea was to give people a lot to celebrate about the state where we live.
I love that. And where can people get a hold of that book?
Oh, they can find it on my website, which is AmandaEDoyle.com, or at the Reedy Press website as well, ReedyPress.com, which is home to a lot of other really great local books.
Awesome. So MissouriBookFestival.com for people to learn more about the event going on September 13th and 14th in Washington, Missouri. Amanda Doyle, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, guys, that's it for the Rachel Zimmerman Show this week. Really hope you enjoyed my conversation with Amy Markscores. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can go back and podcast the show on the Odyssey app or anywhere you get your podcasts. But the Odyssey app is cool because you can pause, you can rewind, you can listen to a ton of different shows, even ones that aren't on KMOX. And we have this new voice message feature where you can go and you can press the microphone button and send us a voice message letting us know what you think about what we're talking about, what's going on that day, what's on your mind. It's very, very nice. So we would love it if you downloaded the free Odyssey app and chose to use that for KMOX. All right, guys, I'm going to get out of here. It was such a pleasure talking to you this week, and I'll talk to you again next week. Have an amazing weekend. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.